Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Jesus and the Pharisees right after this. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, they're banned from our public institutions, and they're banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, in our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent? But she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's at least one school left in America that's still teaching this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties, and the 33 benefits that we receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty. And you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, or the Law of God, or the Common Law, or Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery, cause and effect. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, didn't cost anything. And you can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. That's if you're on radio and listening to us on radio somewhere. Again, that number is 417-273-4967. Now, and if you're online, or if you've got access to a computer, or you're listening to us on the internet, then go to our website, georgegordon.org. Then click onto the archives page, and you can download this free General Law CD package right there. You can stream it, or you can download it and print it. All right, we've been talking about Jesus and the Pharisees. Jesus was an obnoxious fellow, and he offended the Pharisees. He offended the religious leaders of his day. And it was kind of comical in one way. One day, they came to him and they said, "Hey, you are eating with publicans and sinners." You'll see that in Mark 2, verse 16. Mark 2, 16. He's eating with publicans and sinners. And he had a little story to tell him as a result of that. Let's see if I can find it here for you. In Mark 2, verse 16. "And when the scribes and the Pharisees saw him eat with the publicans and sinners, they said to his disciples, 'How is it that he eats and drinks with these publicans and sinners? He's eaten with truck drivers and longshoremen, and he's eaten with prostitutes.'" Isn't that just special? Now, why would he do such a thing? You know, this is the creator of the universe. He's a guy that says, "Go and sin no more." He said, you know, sin is a transgression of the law. You'd think, you know, preachers, they try to avoid sinners, don't they? He goes on a little bit further here, and he says, "Well, when Jesus heard it, he said to them, 'They that are whole have no need of the physician, but they that are sick. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance.'" Yeah, you know, pretty logical. "I didn't come to call you holy Joes and righteous guys over there, you sky pilots. Hell, you guys have got it knocked. You're on your way to heaven. I came here to call these guys that are sick, the longshoremen, the truckers, and the whores over here. They need a little help. And so that's why I'm over here talking to them, and I'm not over here talking to you." Now, last time I showed you that Winston Churchill had something to say about these people that are called Jews. Khazars is what we're talking about. Not the average Joe Sixpack Jew goes to synagogue like Milton Kagan. I asked Milton about this. I said, "Hey, what about this Jewish conspiracy?" He says, "I don't believe a word of it." Says, I'm not involved in anything like that. You know, we go to synagogue and we do our thing there, you know. And we're not Christians. But then, you know, we're not Muslims and neither are you. And so what's the big deal? So my take on it was this. The average Joe Sixpack Catholic doesn't have any more understanding about what goes on in the inner workings of the Catholic Church than does the average Joe Sixpack Jew that goes to synagogue on Sabbath. He's not involved in any intrigues and trying to overthrow the world. Now, he might be used, he might be a party to it and not know it, I don't think that the average Mormon has any real understanding of what goes on in the inner sanctum of the Mormon church. Why should he? It's satisfactory for him. He goes to church. He does what the church tells him. They tell him, you're going to go to heaven, and that's what he wants. He pays his money. He does his duties, and he's going to be taken care of. Now, there are some bad people in all of these institutions and organizations. There's good people and bad everywhere. And the bad people tend to outnumber the good. Because when a good man finds that there's chicanery and wickedness and evil going on, he quits. He tenders his resignation, and he says, I won't have any part of that. And he leaves. I was watching PBS here the other night, and had a story on here about Peter Cooper. Peter Cooper is the guy that invented or popularized gelatin. You know, you eat Jell-O. He built the Tom Thumb steam locomotive back in 1827, 8 or 9, long in there. He built a rolling mill and turned out railroad rails. He's the guy that invented steel for skyscraper buildings, you know, tall buildings. He was a great industrialist here in the United States, not very well known. You know, J.P. Morgan's well known. John D. Rockefeller is well known. The robber barons, you know, guys like Carnegie and others. But this guy, he was not a robber baron. He was a very religious guy. Mainstream religion, he was a Presbyterian. And he went to church, treated people fair to middle and good, and lived his life. But every time he got involved in politics or he got involved in some business and he found lying and cheating and chicanery there, by God, he'd quit. He'd tell him, you know, I'm not going to participate in this. Now, the liars, the cheats, and the criminals, they infiltrate the good organizations. And then, like a rotten apple in a barrel of good apples, they turn all of the good apples rotten. You cannot take a good person and put him in the Congress of the United States. They will corrupt him. You cannot take a good man and put him in the Congress and expect him to straighten out or to make whole all of these rotten apples. That isn't going to happen. Never has, isn't now, and isn't likely to succeed in the future. So what happens in the real world is you've got a good group of people. They're infiltrated by the evil and wicked, and before long they turn the organization into wicked and evil. Now, these people have a goal. They're wicked and evil, and they have a goal. They're trying to destroy the world, and they're trying to make it wicked and evil. They are the handmen or the handmaidens of Satan the devil. We, you and I, we're told, don't do that. You practice my law. You practice my Ten Commandments. They have infiltrated every church and turned us into pagans. They have infiltrated every political organization and turned it to corruption and filth and perversion. They've infiltrated our schools, and they have taught us to disobey God and to practice the same kind of practices that they practice, wickedness and evil. Well, now, that being the case, it isn't very likely then that we're going to change them. They say in the protocols, we have misled, we have stupefied, we have demoralized the youth of the Gentiles by means of education in principles and theories that are patently false to us, but which we have inspired, and above existing laws without actual change but by distorting them. Through contradictory interpretations, we have created something stupendous in the way of results. Theories like there is no God, or the flood was local, or the creation is a figment of everybody's imagination, the Big Bang theory. These are theories that are patently false to us, but we've inspired them. We are master propagandists. We tell lies over and over and over again. We have control of the news media. We control your very thoughts. Well, okay, now that that's the case, now let's see if there's something we can do about that. Throughout history, there are other people that have been in contact with these Jews. A guy by the name of Dio Cassius. I told you about Seneca and Cicero and Winston Churchill in the last program. Well, let's take a look at these old-timey guys back in the Roman Empire, 2,000 to 3,000 years ago. Well, not 3,000, but 2,500 years ago. This was a second-century Roman historian describing the savage Jewish uprising against the Roman Empire that has been acknowledged as the turning point downward in the course of that great state form. The Jews were destroying both Greeks and Romans. They ate the flesh of their victims. They made belts for themselves out of their entrails and daubed themselves with their blood. In all, 220,000 men perished in Cyrene and 240,000 in Cyprus, and for this reason, no Jew may set foot in Cyprus today. Once the Romans got back into control, they said, we are going to expel the Jews. We won't let them back in there. Diodorus Siculus, first century Greek historian, observed that the Jews treated other people as enemies and inferiors. Usury is the practice of lending money at excessive interest rates. This has for centuries caused great misery and poverty for Gentiles. It has brought strong condemnation of the Jews. Well, hey, boys and girls, let's think about this. We have been told by our Creator, don't practice usury and interest. It takes two to tango. you know, the girl that gets knocked up, you know, that's her fault, and she's guilty. But there was some boy involved there too, wasn't there? Same thing applies here, you know. You had to go down and sign that mortgage contract. Now, we were told, I'm watching these foreclosures, they're on the news every night, and people are just up in arms. Oh, well, these guys are over here, you know, they're foreclosing on me. Hell, you people went down there and signed these usurious mortgage agreements. And now, you're blaming the guy that lent you the money. You should have said to that guy, no, I'm not going to borrow money from you at usury. It's against the law. And, of course, you're sitting there saying, well, that's the only thing I knew. That's right, you went to public school. Nobody ever told you about the law of God and the alternative to that, did they? Bernardino of Feltro, 15th century Italian priest. A mild man who extolled patience and charity in normal circumstances, he described himself as a barking dog when dealing with Jews. Jewish usurers bleed the poor to death and grow fat on their substance. And I, who live on alms, who feed on the bread of the poor, shall I then be mute before outraged charity? Dogs bark to protect those who feed them. And I, who am fed by the poor, shall I see them robbed of what belongs to them and keep silent? Thomas Aquinas, saint, 13th century scholastic philosopher, in his On the Governance of the Jews, he wrote, quote, the Jews should not be allowed to keep what they have obtained from others by usury. It were best that they were compelled to work so that they could earn their living instead of doing nothing but becoming more avarious. And the guy by the name of Hilary Belloc in the book The Jews, page 9, there's already something like a Jewish monopoly in high finance. There is the same element of Jewish monopoly in the silver trade and in the control of various other metals, notably lead, nickel, quicksilver. What is most disquieting of all, this tendency to monopoly is spreading like a disease. H.H. Beamish, in a New York speech in October 30, 1937, said, the Boer War occurred 37 years ago. Boer, B-O-E-R, means farmer. Many criticized a great power like Britain for trying to wipe out the Boers. Upon making inquiry, I found that all of the gold and diamond mines of South Africa were owned by Jews, that Rothschild controlled gold, Samuels controlled silver, Baum controlled other mining, and Moses controlled base metals. Anything these people touch, they inevitably pollute. H. Hughes, the Premier of Australia, in the Saturday Evening Post of June 19, 1919, he said, quote, the Montefiores have taken Australia for their own, and there is not a gold field or a sheep run from Tasmania to New South Wales that does not pay them a heavy tribute. They are the real owners of the Antipodean continent. What is the good of our being a wealthy nation if the wealth is all in the hands of German Jews? Franz Liszt, Jesus Christ, were both opposed to them. Pope Clement, Nesta Webster. Listen to what Franz Liszt had to say. He's a famous composer. He was quoted in Sanctuaries Are These Things So, page 278, he said, quote, the day will come when all nations amidst which the Jews are dwelling will have to raise the question of their wholesale expulsion, a question which will be one of life or death, good health or chronic disease, peaceful existence or perpetual social fever. And Jesus Christ, speaking to the Jews in the Gospel of St. John, chapter 8, verse 44, he said, you are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and he abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, because he is a liar, and the father of it. Pope Clement, all the world suffers from the usury of the Jews, their monopolies and deceit. They have brought many unfortunate people into a state of poverty, especially farmers, working class people, and the very poor. Then, as now, Jews have to be reminded intermittently anew that they were enjoying host rights in any country since they left Palestine and the Arabian Desert. And subsequently, their ethical and moral doctrines, as well as their deeds, rightly deserve to be exposed to criticism in whatever country they happen to live. Nesta Webster, in World Revolution, The Plot Against Civilization, said, since the earliest times, it is as the exploiter that the Jew has been known amongst his fellow men of all races and creeds. Moreover, he has persistently shown himself ungrateful. The Jews have always formed a rebellious element in every state. Now, that goes back into ancient times, doesn't it? Let's flip forward here, and let's take a look at some more modern people, newer people. Ulysses S. Grant, American general, politician, while in command of the 13th Army Corps, headquartered at Oxford, Mississippi. He became so infuriated at Jewish camp followers attempting to penetrate the conquered territory that he finally attempted to expel the Jews. He said, I have long since believed that in spite of all of the vigilance that can be infused into post commanders, the specie regulations of the Treasury Department have been violated, and that mostly by Jews and other unprincipled traitors. So well satisfied have I been of this that I instructed the commanding officer at Columbus to refuse all permits to Jews to come south, and I have frequently had them expelled from the department, but they come in with their carpet sacks, in spite of all that can be done to prevent it. The Jews seem to be a privileged class that can travel anywhere. They will land at any woodyard on the river and make their way through the country. If not permitted to buy cotton themselves, they will act as agents for someone else, who will be at a military post with a treasury permit to receive cotton and pay for it in treasury notes, which the Jew will buy up at an agreed rate, paying gold. That was in a letter to C.P. Walcott, the Assistant Secretary of War in Washington, December 17, 1862. He said the Jews as a class, violating every regulation of trade established by the Treasury Department and also department orders, are hereby expelled from the department. And within 24 hours from the receipt of this order by post commanders, they will see that all of this class of people are furnished with passes and required to leave, and anyone returning after such notification will be arrested and held in confinement until an opportunity occurs of sending them out as prisoners unless furnished with permits from these headquarters. 3. No permits will be given these people to visit headquarters for the purpose of making personal application for trade permits by order of Major General Grant. The expulsion order was immediately countermanded by the General-in-Chief H.W. Halleck in Washington. Apparently, the expelled Jews had immediately contacted their kinsmen there and had pressure brought to bear. Now, we had another guy by the name of William Tecumseh Sherman. He was a 19th century American soldier. And in a letter from Union-occupied Memphis on July 30, 1862, here's what General Sherman had to say about the Jews. He said, "I found so many Jews and speculators here trading in cotton, and secessionists had become so open in refusing anything but gold, that I have felt myself bound to stop it. The gold can have but one use, the purchase of arms and ammunition. Of course, I have respected all permits by yourself or the Secretary of the Treasury, but in these new cases, swarms of Jews, I have stopped it." Well, you know, can't blame a guy for wanting to make a buck, but I just wanted to point out that during the Civil War, it was necessary to expel these guys from places. Here's a number of popes. You know, if you're a Catholic, listen to this. Here's what your popes had to say about the Jews. Sylvester I condemned Jewish anti-Christian activities. Gregory I, the Great, protested wholesale circumcision of Christian slaves by Jewish traders, who monopolized the slave trade in Europe and the Middle East and were widely suspected of supplying white girls to Oriental and African buyers. Gregory VIII forbade Jews to have power over Christians in a letter to Alfonso VI of Castile. Gregory IX, Benedict XIII, Julius III, Paul IV, Pius IV, Pius V, Gregory XIII, Clement VIII, Alexander VIII, Benedict XIV, Pius VII, Benedict XIV. I mean, I could sit here. I don't know how many popes there have been. But the Catholic Church and the Catholic popes haven't had much good to say about the Jews, and neither did Jesus. I wanted to point that out to you. Not that Jesus had much good to say about the popes or vice versa. I just wanted you to know that there's been a problem here for a long, long time. Let's see who else of any great substance over here had something to say. Henry Ford. Here's a good one. Henry Ford, the Dearborn Independent, February 1921. He said, "Jews have always controlled the business, the motion picture influence of the United States and Canada. And it's exclusively under the control, moral and financial, of the Jewish manipulators of the public mind." The manipulators of the public mind. That's quite a statement. Let's see if I can find my book here. If you'll remember, there was a statement made in here. Something to the order of, oh yeah, here it is. "You Christians make much noise and fury about the undue Jewish influence in your theaters and movie palaces." Very good. "Granted, your complaint is well-founded," says Marcus Eli Ravage. "In your churches, your schools, your laws, and your governments, and the very thoughts that you think every day." That's what Henry Ford said. He said, "These guys control your thoughts." Vladimir Lenin, the founder of Bolshevik communism, from an article in Northern Pravda, October 1913, quoted in Lenin on the Jewish Question, page 10. He said, "There, the great and universally progressive features of Jewish culture have made themselves clearly felt. Its internationalism, its responsiveness of the advanced movements of our times. The percentage of Jews in democratic and proletarian movements is everywhere higher than the percentage of Jews in the general population. Those Jewish Marxists who join up in the international Marxist organizations with the Russian, Lithuanian, Ukrainian, and other workers, adding their might, both in Russian and in Jewish, to the creation of an international culture of the working class movement, are continuing the best traditions of Jewry." Isn't that just special? Well, listen, Whether we call these guys communists or Marxists, or we call them Christians or fascists, the bottom line to the story is these people are enemies. They were enemies of Jesus. They were at that time called Pharisees. These people that are called Pharisees are the same Pharisees that we have today. There isn't any change in the last 2,000 years. Let's see if I can find that quote for you again. About page 51, was it? Where it said that there's been no meaningful change. The Jewish religion as it is today traces its descent without a break through all of the centuries from the Pharisees. The Pharisees again. Now, whether you call these guys rabbis, or you call them Jews, or you call them Khazars, or something else. And then the crazy part of this is that throughout history, we've had people in our politics, in our nation, in our education, and they've warned us and told us, hey, listen, this isn't good. You need to make some kind of a meaningful change here. We haven't done it. A guy by the name of George Bernard Shaw had something to say about this. He said, this is the real enemy, the invader from the East, the Druze, the Riffian, the Oriental parasite, in a word, the Jew. This craving for bouquets of Jews is a symptom of racial degeneration. The Jews are worse than my own people. Those Jews who still want to be the chosen race, chosen by the Lord, or the late Lord Balfour, can go to Palestine and stew in their own juice. The rest had better stop being Jews and start being human beings. Literary Digest, October 12, 1932. George Bernard Shaw, British dramatist, playwright, 1856 to 1950. Richard Wagner, famous German composer. He didn't have much good to say about him either. President Harry Truman, William Jennings Bryan, famed lawyer and politician, Henry Wallace, and, Henry Adams, Truman Capote, Voltaire. Now, with that in mind, let me go back here into the Pharisees. These Pharisees now in the Scripture were constantly taking counsel, remember, against the Messiah? In Matthew 22, verse 15, let's take another look here. What were they doing in Russia? What were they doing in the overthrow of every government that's been overthrown over the past 100 years? They were stirring up hate and discontent. And so over here in Matthew 22, verse 15, then went the Pharisees, and they took counsel how they might entangle him in his talk. And they went out unto him, or they sent out rather unto him, their disciples with the Herodians, saying, Master, we know that you are true. We know that you teach the way of God in truth, and neither do you care for any man, for you regard not the person of men. Boy, that was the truth. They weren't whistling Dixie there. The Messiah, he offended them. And then his disciples came to him and said, hey, you are offensive. You are offending the religious leaders, the political leaders, the lawyers. Well, what happens today? Same thing happens today as was happening then. So I guess we have to ask ourselves, well, is it time for us to start practicing the law of God, or do we want to continue practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto? There's a cause and effect result that comes from this. And so, well, we've got a minute or two. I've got to give you the break here. We're at the halfway point. And then let's come back and we'll take a look at this cause and effect relationship, shall we? You're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and we're open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now the outcome. What happens when we follow Uncle Esau and we disregard the instructions that we got from our Creator? Over here in Deuteronomy chapter 28, it's one of two chapters. Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 are the two penal clause chapters in the Scripture. The bottom line to this is that your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy 84 generations back was standing out there in the wilderness under the mountain called Sinai, and God tendered an offer. My great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy was standing there next to your great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy, and they both signed up and agreed to the terms and conditions of this tender offer. It was a pretty good offer. And you can read it here in chapter 28, verses 1 through about 14, I guess it is. He said, I'm going to give you all these neat blessings. There's 33 benefits that we receive here. Then he said in verse 15, but it shall come to pass, if you will not hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God to observe to do all of his commandments and his statutes which I command you this day, then all these curses are going to come upon you and they're going to overtake you. And the rest of the chapter from verse 15 through verse 68 says, here's what I'm going to do to you if you violate the terms and conditions of our deal. And that's our problem today. Uncle Esau came into the game. And he said the flood was local, it wasn't worldwide. He said the creation is a myth, it didn't happen, the Big Bang occurred. God did not create you and put you in the Garden of Eden. You evolved from some intermediate species over the last 300 million years or something like that. And he said, hey, listen, I'm going to take over your politics and I'm going to give you Obamacare. I'm going to give you socialized medicine, social security. I'm going to give you paper money. We'll get rid of this gold and silver crap. We'll give you real money, $100 bills printed by the Federal Reserve. And all of these abominations that God told us not to do, all of these laws, rules, statutes, and commandments that God gave us, we have been induced in one degree or another to violate. Well, okay, the violation of these laws has a penalty. That's all. And those penalties are coming due. And the global financial crisis that the world is in today is a part and parcel with the violations of the law. The socialized medicine that's being imposed upon us and the taxes that are being exacted from us are the proximate cause of the violations of these laws of our Creator. Now, that's the bad news. Here's the good news. The good news is you can change that any day of the week you want to. Any day of the week. You don't have to change anybody in North or South Dakota. I don't have to go to North Dakota and convince anybody up there that here's what you need to do. And I wouldn't waste my time. If the people of North Dakota all want to violate the law of God, they can do that. But if there's one guy in that country, just one, in that entire state that says, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to practice the law of God, he can do that, and he'll get the benefits from it. Everybody else in the state will be cursed. Everybody else in the state will be punished except that one guy. There's a principle of law that covers that. And you'll find that in Ezekiel chapter 18. And in Ezekiel 18, God says that the guy that commits the crime is the guy who has to pay the time. I'm going to read that to you. And we see that as a matter of law. It's over in about Genesis 18 that deals with Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abraham was talking to Melchizedek. Melchizedek was Jesus. And he said to him, where are you going? And Jesus said, well, I'm going over to Sodom and Gomorrah. He said, what are you going to do over there? He says, I'm going to nuke them. I'm going to nuke both of them. And Abraham was kind of shocked and surprised. He said, why are you going to do that? And he said, because I've heard a report over there. The report that I heard is so bad that I couldn't believe it. And if that report's true, I'm going to destroy that place. Abraham, who probably had some meatpacking plants and office buildings and other investments in downtown Sodom, said to himself, my God, I could get wiped out financially. So he said, but what would happen if you had 50 righteous over there? Would you kill the 50 righteous along with all of the wicked? God said, no, I would not kill the 50 righteous. And in their conversation, he said, what about 45? Nope, if there was 45 righteous, I would save the whole place for 45. Got it down, 45, 40, 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10. I think he could have sold it for 5 if he'd have put his mind to it. But at 10, he said, if you can find 10 righteous in the place, I won't destroy the whole place. There was only 3 or 4. So what he did was he moved the 3 or 4 righteous out of the city. I know you're going to lose your home. I know you're going to lose all your property, but you'll save your life. So he moved Lot and his two daughters and his wife out. The wife looked back. She was turned to a pillar of salt. She didn't make it, but out of the three, or the three righteous, they did make it. But here in Ezekiel 18, you say in verse 19, does not the Son bear the iniquity of the Father? When the Son has done that which is lawful and right, and has kept all of my statutes, and has done them, he shall surely live. The soul that sins, it shall die. The Son shall not bear the iniquity of the Father, and neither shall the Father bear the iniquity of the Son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him. But if the wicked will turn from all of his sins that he has committed, and keep all of my statutes, and do that which is lawful and right, he shall surely live, he shall not die. That's pretty good news. There's another story over here that goes along that line. It's in Revelation 3:10, in which you get the same benefit, just in case you were wondering. In verse 10, he says, because you've kept the word of my patience, I also will keep you from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world to try them which dwell upon the earth. If you practice this law, you're not going to die if you're under the age of 70. Now, you're entitled, under the terms and conditions of our contract with God, you're entitled to 25,550 days, 70 years. 365 times 70, 25,550 days. Now, I don't have that benefit. I'm over 70. Now, once you reach 70, you become a free market agent, a free agent. But until you're 70, you're entitled to all of the benefits. And the benefits come from one simple factor. I'm practicing all of this law. Now, there are 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments in the entire law of God. There are 2,000 traffic statutes, rules, and regulations in your traffic code, and you have a driver's license. You signed your driver's license. You agreed with your state that you would obey all 2,000 of those laws. You did not believe that you could not practice all 2,000 of those traffic laws. You thought you could do that. You agreed to. You agreed to practice three times as many traffic statutes in your state as there are laws in the scripture for you to follow. So when I hear somebody say, well, you can't practice all those laws of God in the Bible, that's impossible. Why is it impossible to practice these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, but it's possible for you to practice more than 2,000 in your traffic code that you agreed to? All right, boys and girls, I say that's a cop-out. I think that we can practice all of these laws. You haven't murdered anybody recently, have you? Do you think you could live the rest of your life without killing anybody? That's one. There's only 758 more to go. Are you out practicing adultery now with your neighbor's wife? Oh, you're not? Do you think you could live the rest of your life by not practicing adultery with your neighbor's wife? Well, that's two. And we got 757 more. You know, when we get down here on the bottom line, I think that if you can practice the traffic code of California, you can practice the biblical code in the Bible. I think you can do that. If you practice the traffic code, all that's going to do is keep you from paying a fine. If you practice the law of God, that could keep you from getting killed. Now, there's some heavy-duty stuff coming down, and I just wanted to point that out to you. Some of this heavy-duty stuff that's coming down on us is spelled out right here in Deuteronomy 28. Let me give you some illustrations here. He says, moreover, all of these curses, in verse 45, he says, moreover, all of these curses shall come upon you, and they shall pursue you, and they shall overtake you until you be destroyed, because you hearkened not unto the voice of the Eternal your God to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded you. We don't have any problems following the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, do we? We're not having any problems practicing the Uniform Commercial Code of Kansas now, are we? We can practice the traffic statutes of Nebraska. We can practice the Uniform Code of Military Justice when we're sent to Afghanistan, can't we, boys? Well, why is it that we can practice the UCC, the UCMJ, we can practice the traffic codes, but we can't practice the Ten Commandments? Huh? Well, I think that's going to fall on deaf ears if you want to bring that up for some kind of a defense in the judgment. So, Jesus comes along now, and he had a running battle, remember, with the Pharisees, because the Pharisees, that is, our Uncle Esau, he knew who they were. He knew what they were. He said plainly, they're hypocrites. They were the same kind of spoilers then that they are now. There isn't anything new going on today that wasn't going on with Jesus. He had the same problems with them that you and I have today. And then he told us plainly, he said, now listen, let's all wake up and smell the coffee here. We've been told not to do that. Let me show you how that works. He practiced the law. Our problem is that up to today, we haven't done that. And the wages of sin is death. And so we all have to pay that penalty, death. He didn't have to, but he did. He made a sacrifice for us. That's good. Now, he comes along with a little better deal with us. Remember Revelation 3:10 now. Remember Ezekiel chapter 18. There's a whole chapter 18 there. Read it all. Take you about 10 minutes. And then he says, now, if you're wicked, if you're evil, you go out and break my law. You give me the finger. And here's what I'm going to do to you. You will not live. You will surely die. If you're concerned about America and where we're headed and where we're going, or Canada or Australia or New Zealand or any place else, there's a penalty that comes into play for the violation of the law. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. But on the other hand, the bright side of it is, if you'll practice the law, then the penalty passes from you. And it starts today. You can start it in the morning. So oftentimes people, you know, they'll say to me, well, now what are we going to do today? Who should we vote for in the upcoming election? What political party should we be electing to office? And I tell them, well, now haven't you been voting for the last 200 years? And has that solved your problem in the last 200 years? It looks like to me that voting may be the problem. And let me tell you, it is, because in 1 Samuel chapter 8, we got uppity with God himself. And we said, we want a king like all the nations around us. And he said to us very plainly, he said, that's a mistake. You know, wipe that one out of your memory bank. And we said, nevertheless, we're going to have a king. And he says, okay, you go ahead, you try that. But in that day, when you elect this Barack Obama clown, you're going to cry out to me in that day because of this king that you set over you. Not the king that I set over you, the king that you set over you, all of you Democrats. And I will not hear you. I tell my students very plainly, I said, if you want to pray to Jesus, no, get after it. But he already told you he ain't listening to this crap. I think you'd be better off if you forget about praying to Jesus and concentrate on practicing the law. I think it's time to start performing now. You know, it's like my old daddy used to say, get out there, mow the grass, feed the dog, make your bed, wash the dishes, take out the garbage. I think now, it isn't time now to start imploring daddy and saying, oh, dad, I didn't have time to make the bed, and I was really busy doing my homework, and I didn't take out the garbage, and the reason I didn't do the lawn, this isn't the time to be given excuses. This is the time to get off your dead ass and get out there and mow the grass. Make the bed. Otherwise, there's going to be a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. That's the bottom line. Now, the bad guys over here, these are the people that I call Uncle Esau. They've got an agenda. They're working hard on the agenda, and they're going to succeed at it. God himself says they're going to succeed. It's a part of Bible prophecy. God himself is going to help them succeed, if nothing else. Their success is our punishment. So if the rest of America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Western Europe want to be punished, let them go. What do I care? What I'm concerned about is me. Me. What do I have to do to get off the punishment cycle? And the answer is very plain. Practice the law. He told the woman taken in adultery, he said, now go and sin no more. In Matthew 19:16, when the Pharisee asked him, this guy was a lawyer and a Pharisee, you know, tempting him, he said, hey, what do I have to do to go to heaven? And the Messiah told him, he said, keep the commandments. Practice the law. Keep the commandments. Stop practicing adultery. You whores, find a new occupation. Maybe a waitress. Doesn't pay as much, but it's honest. You can pay the rent. Now, you know, if you want to make big bucks and you want to practice the part of a harlot, then don't cry out to Jesus when Uncle Esau comes. Remember, he's got an agenda, and here's what he intends to do with it. He's got an agenda, he's going to do it. Now, in the protocols, he says, here's what our agenda is. They lay that out very succinctly. You'll see that in the International Jew. By the way, you can get that book on the Protocols of the Learned Elders. Why don't you try that? BraveNewBookstore.com. I'm pretty sure they'll have that in stock. Remember that number, 512-480-2503, BraveNewBookstore.com. Protocols of the Learned Elders. Find out what the agenda is. I think that if you spend your time looking at Uncle Esau's agenda, instead of worrying about who's going to take control of the House and the Senate, because boys and girls, it doesn't make any difference who takes control of the House and Senate. Those two political parties are run by Uncle Esau. Remember the story? I said, if I had nine guys on my football team, and you had nine guys on your football team, and I could change one guy on your football team so that I've got nine on my team and one of my guys on your team, do you know the most valuable player that I've got playing for me is the one player I've got on your team, that one infiltrator, the guy that's going to drop the ball, the guy that's going to kick the field goal and miss, the guy that's going to throw the touchdown pass short. That's the most valuable guy I've got in the game. My man on your team. And our problem, boys and girls, is that in our Congress, Uncle Esau just about has them all on his team. And you've got a mortgage and he owns it. He's got you by the short hairs. It's time to wake up and smell the coffee. Wake up and smell the coffee. In verse 46, he says, and they shall be upon you for a sign and a wonder, and then upon your seed, that your children forever. Because you served not the eternal your God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. Therefore shall you serve your enemies, which the eternal shall send against you in hunger, and in thirst, and in nakedness, and in want. And then he shall put a yoke of iron upon your neck until he has destroyed you. Now the penalty, in case you were wondering here, the penalty for Sabbath breaking, and remember, Uncle Esau has taken our identity. He took our Sabbath, the seventh day Sabbath, Saturday, and converted us to Christianity, and we're practicing the Mithraic sun worship day, Sunday, worshiping the sun. Christians, wake up now. He's changed our Sabbath. And the penalty for Sabbath breaking is national captivity. Now, we've been in national captivity several times in the past. All 12 tribes of us have all gone into national captivity over and over and over and over and over ad nauseum. We have never learned the lesson in the past. I don't think we're going to learn it now, and I don't think we're going to learn it in the future. But if you're concerned about it, you can start practicing the Sabbath in the morning, and you can avoid national captivity. Now, Daniel, if you'll remember, when Judah went into captivity, was taken to Babylon. And he very shortly rose up in the government, and he was the number two or the number three man in the empire. That's what Sabbath keeping got Daniel. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they threw him in the fiery furnace because they wouldn't practice the practices of Babylon, but they couldn't kill him in the fiery furnace. Why is that? God has a covenant. He has to protect people that obey the law and keep his commandments. That's what his end of the deal or his end of the bargain is. So a lot of times, you know, people say, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know either. I'm not here to persuade you. I'm just here to give you information. And the information from the scripture is, you break the law, you pay the penalty. Uncle Esau is going to see to that. You practice the law, then you don't pay the penalty. There's no penalty for obedience to the law. In fact, there's benefits. Benefits. If you want to make money, you practice the economic laws. There's 17 of them. You don't practice those 17 economic laws, you get economic penalties. Cause and effect. No such thing as a broken law without a penalty. So there's the story of Jesus and the Pharisees. They're alive and well, working their hearts out today just like they were 2,000 years ago. So the question arises, do you want to follow the Pharisees or did you want to follow the Messiah? So how simple that is? The choice is yours. I've got the information out to you. Now do that which you think is right. Hey, I'm out of time. I've got to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to leave you right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.